Well, every time I recollect it, it changes, right? That's the nice thing about it. Any case, it was a couple summers ago, not last summer, as I think Central reminded me, it was 25 years earlier that I got my PhD, and I'd been spent 2.5 decades thinking about one and two-dimensional systems, and I just was getting tired of it. So I wanted to try to understand three dimensions. And in two dimensions, you can go a long way understanding quantum Hall type states and really almost all of the time reversal broken TQFT type phases, at least starting to think in terms of particles and vortices, which are binding together and making these vortex particle composites and condensing them. And so I wanted to explore things which I thought others had probably looked at, and to some extent they have, in three dimensions where one can make an analogous kind of construction where one takes an electric particle in three dimensions and a magnetic particle in three dimensions, that is a monopole, and you form what's called a dyon. So the magnetic and electric particles are combined together. In some situations, that dyon can be a boson. So then you can condense that boson, and you can try to ask what type of phases can you get into, and what are their properties. So I'd like to tell you a little bit about what we've been doing along those lines. And this work, at least recently, has been almost entirely driven by Max Metlitsky, who many of you probably know, and with Charlie Kane. So I'll talk a little bit about dyon condensation, and at least I think of this as a different approach to try to access a novel phase of three-dimensional bosons and fermions. I'll mention several dyon constructions for various symmetry-protected topological phases. I started out 2 years ago, I wasn't thinking about symmetry-protecting topological phase. I was thinking about trying to understand the electron topological insulator, and I realized that free fermions were just too complicated for me, so I actually wanted a field theory, bosonic field theory for the electron topological insulator, and I'd still like to have that, and maybe eventually we will have that. But at this stage, seem to be restricted to the bosonic SPT phases. And then I'll, hopefully if I have time, talk about something called the statistical Witten effect, which is the where an external monopole placed into one of these three-dimensional bosonic SPT phases is statistically transmuted and becomes a fermion. Okay, so three-dimensional topological insulators, probably most of you know much more about it than I do. Some history, band insulators with strong spin orbit interactions, gapless surface state, single Dirac cone on the surface, this helical metal. There's this quantized electromagnetic response in terms of F wedge F, the so-called theta term, where one has theta equals pi. I always found this a little unsatisfying, although I think in hindsight, perhaps I was too skeptical of this. But what this encapsulates is the response of the electron topological insulator to an external electromagnetic field. So it's akin to saying that the fractional quantum Hall effect at nu equals 1/3 has a Hall conductivity of 1/3, right? That's essentially what this is saying. And what we don't have, or wasn't clear that we had, is the analog of Chern-Simons theory, where we actually have a field theory, where we have dynamical degree of freedom, where we can use that field theory to perhaps derive the response of the system to an external electromagnetic field. So that would be one of the goals. I think I've mentioned that. And as emphasized recently in Xiaogan Wen and his collaborators, topological insulators really are members of a very broad class of symmetry-protected topological phases for fermions and bosons, which have distinctive surface properties. So just to reorient you, Central mentioned these things yesterday. Symmetry-protected topological phases, at least as far as I understand them, are gapped quantum phases of bosons or fermions or spins in, let's say, d dimensions, with a non-degenerate ground state on any d-dimensional manifold. There's no fractionalization in the bulk. There's short-range entanglement in the bulk of the system. But they possess distinct surface phases. So all of the interesting physics is going on the surface. So for one-dimensional SPTs, like the Haldane spin chain, the spin half at the end is gapless. There's no magnetic field on that. So two-dimensional SPTs, like the quantum spin Hall effect, the edges are either gapless or symmetry broken. Those are along the lines of what Eris was talking about. And the interesting thing to me about the three-dimensional SPTs is that there's a third possibility. The surfaces can be gapless, they can be symmetry broken, or they can have an intrinsic topological order on the surface where that intrinsically topologically ordered phase respects all of the bulk symmetries that are protecting the phase, the bulk phase in the first place. So I've been struggling this last year, sort of trying to understand anomalies. I didn't really understand what anomalous meant. I could look at them in the dictionary. But in the context of particle physics, where the history of anomalous field theory arose, I was having a lot of trouble. And so finally I realized, really following Shaogun, I think that surface field theories are anomalous and they're not well defined. That's what it means. So if you have a field theory and you don't know how to define it and you're not sure what it is, and then you realize you can't define it, you've got an anomalous field theory. Or the way Shaogun actually put it in this wonderful quote, and I wish you'd written this paper a year earlier so I could have saved the time trying to cogitate on anomalous field theories. So Shaogun says, we know that anomalous gauge theories are not well defined. But how can we classify something that, I don't know if this is or are, that are not well defined? My grammar skills are comparable to yours, actually. So. But very seriously, so anomalous gauge theories are not well defined, so what are they? Well, you may think you know how to define them, but so how can you use them, really? Well, I don't think you can, really, in some sense, but I think Shaogun now has turned this around, and I very much like this way of thinking about things, is we can think about SPT phases, and we can say that surfaces have some interesting physical properties, and as viewed by an observer on that surface, if they wanted to use canonical quantum field theory, they would have trouble accounting for all the physically observed properties on the surface of that SPT. So they would find something anomalous. They would be unable to develop a well-defined, regularized theory for what they were observing. Focusing on three-dimensional bosonic SPTs, and as Sental emphasized, interactions here have to be included right up front. That makes them harder, but in some sense more interesting. The two-dimensional quantum Hall effect technology is not directly relevant, the K-matrix approach. Cohomology, classification, apparently simply for bosons, correct me if I'm wrong. For me, it's sufficiently complicated, for bosons, fermions, or anything. I don't understand what it is, and I've decided we'll never understand what cohomology means. So I'm hoping we can move forward, I can move forward in this field without understanding. And many times in the past, Shaogun, I've hoped that it wasn't necessary to understand the things that you were doing, and I've been burned on a number of occasions, and probably I'll be burned on this one as well, but there we are. Cohomology does not expose the physics to me, I don't know. But beautiful paper by Ashwin and Sental, where they just basically, rather than using cohomology, they used their own brilliance. To bootstrap their way, not that Shaogun wasn't using his brilliance, but to bootstrap their way up, in physical terms, to understand really a whole group of three-dimensional bosonic symmetry-protected topological phases, and they were able to essentially guess or motivate the surface possible surface phases for those. And so, in the last 6 months or so, we've been trying to basically, connect onto the results that they have and the extensions thereof by a number of other people more recently. So let me, in this talk, very briefly introduce dye and condensation, discuss possible three-dimensional phases, and then turn to three-dimensional bosonic SPT phases. So as opposed to in two dimensions where in an electron system or two-dimensional boson system, one can either describe the system in terms of the bosons or the vortices. And someone can start imagining, pairing vortices and bosons and condensing. In 3+1 dimensions where one has electric charges, one wants to find a monopole. But there are no monopoles in nature, and so we have to make them up. And now we're very good at doing so. We just use 20th century physics, partons. So we write the boson here. Imagine I have a boson just hopping on the sides of a cubic lattice, operate a capital B, and I write it in terms of two composites, little b dagger plus, little b minus. Each of these little b's has charge 1/2. The big B has charge 1. And when one does this, one introduces a redundancy into the description. There's in the cases I'm interested in, there's going to be a U1 redundancy, which one has to rectify by introducing a gauge field, in this case a U1 gauge field, so that the physical properties of the original boson are gauge invariant. Okay, so that's sort of the approach. And so in 3 plus 1 dimensions, what one would write down for a theory in terms of these partons and the gauge field is essentially scalar quantum electrodynamics. It's a Maxwell electrodynamics with bosonic matter fields. I've written it here in a slightly maybe unfamiliar way, but what I've done is defined a parton, a four current, JB, which is curl of now a two form. So this is what one does in the Chern-Simons theory. One writes J is curl A. So this is just the high dimensional analog of that. J is curl, bad notation perhaps, capital B. Defined a field strength. This is the electromagnetic field strength of this internal gauge field, little A. And what's nice about the representation I've chosen here, and really learned this from a nice Cardi paper, is that I'm encoding the compactness of the electromagnetic field. Rather than using a cosine curl A, one's writing this as curl A minus an integer, or 2 pi times an integer. And this is like a Villain representation of the periodic potential that the magnetic flux sees. And the nice thing about that is that this two-form capital M not only encodes the compactness, but it encodes the Dirac string and the monopole four current. So capital M, if you take the curl of that, you get the monopole four current. So in this representation of scalar QED4, one has the bosonic four current, that is the charge four current, the monopole four current, and the couplings to the appropriate couplings to the electromagnetic field. Now, we're interested in forming dions. Dions have been used in various contexts, but what I mean by a dion is a real, genuine bound state of a boson or a charged particle under the U1, so it's one of these partons, and a monopole, okay? Literally, I'm going to glue them together, something like this. So I'm going to form an NM dion, N bosons and M monopoles, and we can analyze this, very simply, actually, it turns out, from this QED4, because we can just replace the bosonic current by N times a dion current and the monopole current by M times a dion current. And then we end up with a theory in which we can just focus in on a four current for dions for this composite object and write down a dion Lagrangian. Details aren't so important. But essentially, we have the dions have replaced what were both the charges and the monopoles with an appropriate coefficients N and M here. And that's fine. Now, one can analyze this field theory by integrating out the gauge field little a, which is a Gaussian integral, so one can just do that. And it turns out one generates generally a Berry's phase for the dynamics of this dion object. And this Berry's phase encodes the statistics of the dion. Now we're in 3 plus 1 dimensions, so we don't expect fractional statistics, and we don't find it. We find things that are consistent with what had been known for many years in the particle physics community, which is the following, that the Berry's phase for the dion is equal to an integer I times an integer times pi times n times m. So n was the charge and m was the monopole charge in the dion. So n times m, when it's even, there is no Berry's phase. The dion is a boson. So n times m is even, we've got a boson. When n times m is odd, the dion is a fermion. Okay. No, but this is nothing to do with the theta term, right? And so, if you an electron topological insulator, you put in a monopole and you suck up some charge, maybe a half charge because theta is equal to pi. That does nothing to the statistics of the monopole. Okay, so I'm not going to call that a dion. I mean, that's a boson with some polarization charge. It's a monopole with a polarization charge, and so. So here, N and M are quantized in the same reason that in the quantum Hall effect, P and Q are quantized, right? You have P bosons and Q vortices, which form a composite, and they condense.
So basically, right? If I add a theta term here, the theta term for F gauge field here, it won't affect.
It doesn't affect the statistics. It doesn't. Well, you can add it in here. What it doesn't. If I condense this dion, I've broken time reversal invariance. Yeah. And then I can add the theta term if I want, or maybe I should add it. But it doesn't actually make any difference to this result about the statistics of the dions. Okay, and this is that's different, of course, like in the fractional quantum Hall effect. You can think of Laughlin state in the Chern-Simons representation. When you add in a vortex, then it sucks in a polarization charge of 1/3, and that object statistically is then transmuted and becomes a statistics, pi over 3. So in 3+1 dimensions, you might have thought that if you put in a monopole and there's some polarization charge that's sucked in, that it would statistically transmute the monopole, but that's not the case, right? So things are much simpler in some ways. So the dion statistics. So how about dion condensation? Well, if n times m is even, the dion is a boson, so we can condense it. And in the formalism, we just take this a quantity d, which is 2 pi times an integer, and just take it on the reals. Right, so take the current of the dions as a continuous variable because the dion density is going to be fluctuating a lot, and then we end up with a theory that we can work with. It's basically a Gaussian theory, and it consists of a bulk piece and a boundary piece, we can ask what are then the remaining particles in this dion condensate, right? So I've taken these n bosons and m monopoles, make a bound state condensed, what's left? What are the particle excitations left in the theory? Well, it turns out with this NM dion condensate, all of the dions, dions with N prime, M prime are confined unless the ratio of N prime to M prime is equal to N over M, okay? So everything generally is gonna be confined except in this situation two. In situation one, if we take N and M mutually prime, then everything that all the partons, the bosonic partons, and the monopoles are confined, they're gone. So we did this parton construction. We introduced these bosonic partons. We introduced the monopoles. We've now formed this dion and condensed. They're gone. The bulk is going to become trivial in this when n and m are mutually prime. Trivial means that the only excitations in the bulk are the original physical bosons, right? Trivial phase, except it can have a non-trivial surface, possibly, and I'll come back to that. When n and m have a common factor, so for example, n times m is an integer, n prime, m prime, then one can have a deconfined dions. Let me just take one example because it's rather nice and it ties in with very nice work by Michael Levin and Shagun Wen, when they talked about what they called an odd D2 gauge theory. So here, if we consider a 2-2 dion condensate, so two charges and two monopoles and condensed, then in that bulk state, there are deconfined excitations, which are the 1-1 dions. It's like half of the particle that you condensed is still present. And what the 1-1 dions are fermions. They were fermions to begin with, and they still remain fermions, except now you've gotten rid of the photon. So before they were charged. Now they're not charged, although they're charged under a Z2. But first of all, so they're fermions, you exchange them, you get a minus sign. And okay, so as I was saying, you've got rid of the photon in the gauge field. And these now fermions are minimally coupled to a Z2 gauge theory. And the Z2 gauge theory is like a toric code in 3 dimensions. And the toric code in 3 dimensions has magnetic flux tubes. And so here one has magnetic flux tubes in the Z2 gauge theory. That's supposed to be these purple lines. And the property is that if one takes one of these fermionic point particles and drags it through the loop, one picks up a minus sign. Okay. What year did you guys write this paper? Remember? it is true you guys write so many papers that it. let me leave it blank. There was one, I think you mostly it was done with a U1 gauge theory. I mean, you constructed a. Gauge theory where the ends of your strings were fermions, right? And you had some hopping algebra that you introduced, right? So, and I think maybe you didn't do the Z2 case, but maybe you could have, I can't remember. But so this is, here it emerges out of this field theory. So
this is the more general, for any gauge group, you can have a so-called order representation. You can turn all the orders to make it into fermions.
I think so.
So
yeah.
For Z2, like all the charge,
yeah. But it's interesting, like you can consider 4, 4, And then 1, 1 is that, and 3, 3 are fermions, but 2, 2 is a boson.
Not
and it, and
any order of them.
Yeah, and you know, maybe there's things you can do more interesting with non-abelian gauge fields to begin with. But anyway, so this is kind of an aside. It's a bulk phase of where we started with bosons hopping on a three-dimensional lattice, and through this gymnastics of breaking the boson into two pieces, taking these fragments of the bosons, these partons, and these monopoles, gluing them together, condensing them, and you end up with a fermion in the spectrum, charge 1/2 fermions, if the original charge was conserved, and then with a Z2 gauge field. So I thought it was kind of fun to see that emerge. And you can do this very carefully. You can. Max Metlitsky can do this very carefully on a lattice and look at the hopping algebra, you know, of these dions, of the 1-1 dions, and see the fermion statistics explicitly. You know, so it's rather nice. You guys were just able to guess somehow the phase factors that you had to add, you know, when you were hopping the ends of the string, you know, by doing some projection. It's mystifying. It's amazing you guys. I'd like to talk to you about how you guessed that, actually. But here we just, you know, calculate. Okay. So let's focus in remaining time on the case where n and m are mutually prime. So then in this dion condensate, in the bulk of it, everything is confined. The bulk is trivial. But things can, in principle, be interesting on the surface. And what we find in this simplest case is that there's a surface Chern-Simons theory with theta equals m over n. Now the physics, and on the surface there are deconfined partons which dynamically have flux attached to them. And it's actually rather nice in this dion condensate to see how Chern-Simons theory emerges, you know, in pictorially. And so maybe I'll just spend 2 minutes to try to describe that. So as you know, in a superconductor, the main thing about a superconductor is that there's a Meissner effect, that the magnetic field is expelled, right? So in a superconductor, which is a charged condensate, in a monopole condensate, which is kind of the dual of a superconductor, it's the electric flux which is expelled, or if you force it in, it's quantized. So in a dion condensate, the analog of screening of a magnetic field or an electric field by a monopole condensate or a charged condensate is the screening of a particular combination of the electric and magnetic fields. So Me, this is the electric field, minus Nb, is the magnetic field, is equal to zero. That's expelled. You can put in flux tubes, which cost a finite amount of energy. That would be like an apricose or flux lattice, if you will. But let's not do that. Okay, so now let's come to this picture. What I'm imagining is that on the upper half plane is this dion condensate. Let me take the 2-1 dion condensate. And now on the lower half, I want to take a trivial insulator, so this is, you know, the vacuum. And one way one can describe that is in terms of a monopole condensate, just condensing the monopole that confines the charges. So now I stick this blue particle. This carries a charge 1 under the internal gauge field. So there's an electric field of strength 1 emanating from this charge. But the electric flux cannot go into the monopole condensate any more than magnetic flux can go into a superconducting charge condensate. So the electric flux has to go up into the dion condensate. But electric flux by itself doesn't like going up into the dion condensate because there's the Meissner effect for the combination of electric and magnetic flux. So what has to happen is that due to the Meissner effect in the dion condensate, one has a magnetic flux which is induced and bound to this electric flux. So in this case, 2, 1, you actually have flux pi, which is bound to the charge 1 parton. And you might have said, well, what happens to this magnetic flux when it goes down into here? Well, here the magnetic flux is now going into a monopole condensate, so it is what we call debye-screened. I mean, if you put a magnetic field on a superconductor, the magnetic field is expelled. If you put an electric charge on a superconductor, the electric flux is screened out, and that's what happens here. So one can see, you know, rather nicely that the Chern-Simons theory kind of emerges, the flux attachment occurs that one can sit and look at. So there's dynamically attaching of flux. Now, this dion condensate phase 2-1, I think, is probably the same phase as the original Walker-Wang three-dimensional TQFT, and which was also looked at by Fiona and collaborators. And there was an issue, and I
think there still is an issue of whether or not this Dirac condensate is in fact a distinct phase from the trivial insulator, and I'm pretty confident that it isn't. It's not really a distinct phase any more than a charged condensate. The Higgs phase is different than a confined phase. Those are the same phase, and so we believe this Dirac condensate is the same as a trivial phase. And indeed, what one can imagine doing is taking this Chern-Simons theory on the surface, where one has these bosonic particles, which are actually statistically transmuted becoming semions. And one can think of this surface as the nu equals 1/2 bosonic quantum Hall state. And one can drive a phase transition on the surface to a trivial insulating state of bosons. And so you can just drive a surface phase transition, having a trivial, fully gapped phase, separating this putative Dirac condensate from this trivial phase, thereby deducing that this Dirac condensate, which one was hoping was some non-trivial phase, actually is the same phase as the trivial phase. So that's a bit disappointing, but it's consistent with cohomology. The only symmetry we were putting in here was charge conservation. There was no time reversal invariance, and cohomology tells us there's no non-trivial phases just with charge conservation, I believe. So let's try to put in some more symmetry, and in particular, we can try to put in a time reversal invariance. And as we'll see, we can then access many different symmetry protected topological phases using various different constructions with time reversal symmetry and other symmetries as well. And there's a related recent work by Shagan and Peng. So what I want to do just is briefly sketch these Dirac constructions, and we take a cue from Viswanath and Senthil, although it turns out there's some sense more direct route that we don't need to do this, but it makes things simpler to explain, is that we enlarge the symmetry U1 cross time reversal invariance. This is a semi-direct product. Physically, what one has is just bosons hopping around a lattice with time reversal invariance. That's what, and we now imagine we have two flavors of bosons. So we have U1 cross U1 cross time reversal. And we can then break down that U1 symmetry at the end after we've gone into the phase we're interested in. And now we break both the bosons B1 and B2 into their respective partons. We have two sets of gauge fields, little A1 and little A2. And so here, all the trick in doing these constructions for these SPT phases using these Dirac condensates and partons is to choose, I guess, what would be called the PSG appropriately. So choose the way in which these partons transform under the global symmetries of the physical boson. That is under U1 and time reversal. And so this is, I've shown here how we've chosen little B1 and little B2 to transform under time reversal. And it's probably too small to see, but B2 goes to B2 dagger, and B1 goes to B1. And that's kind of important. So in any case, we then can ask, well, what kind of dions can we make? And it turns out that the appropriate dion construction involves two types of dions. A dion here where we take two charges under the first U1, first internal U1 gauge field, and a monopole in the magnetic flux of the second gauge field, and vice versa. So it's kind of a mutual dion condensate. And then we form these two dions, we condense, and ask what happens. we can just work everything through, essentially analytically, it's more or less a Gaussian theory. We generate an effective Lagrangian here. The bulk is trivial. Everything is confined, and we set it up to be so, since we're looking for triviality, symmetry protected trivial phases, what Shagan, I think, sometimes calls them. And that's, so we want to make sure that the bulk is trivial, and everything is confined. All of these silly partons and monopoles are gone in the bulk. But you end up with a surface theory, which is a mutual Chern-Simons between these two gauge fields, A1 and A2. And the way we've constructed things is this mutual Chern-Simons theory is explicitly time reversal invariant because A1 and A2 transform differently under time reversal. Good. So questions, what's the nature of the surface of this mutual Dirac condensate? The bulk is trivial, but let's look at the surface. And is the mutual Dirac condensate a distinct phase from the trivial mod insulator of bosons? I mean, if it is an SPT, it almost by definition is. So what's the surface of the mutual Dirac condensate? Well, we can just take this effective theory, this F wedge F, integrate it to the surface, you get a Chern-Simons theory. And so you get a cross Chern-Simons theory, and then we can look at these statistics and charges of the quasi-particles, of these partons on the surface. The partons are deconfined in the surface. And what one finds, which is something entirely consistent with what was obtained earlier by Vishwasnath and Sental, was a toric code, right? A toric code in which one has what? One has electric and magnetic particles, the E and the M particle. And those E and M particles are bosons, they're mutual semions. When you take one around the other, you get a minus sign, just like in the regulatory code. And the only difference between this and the regulatory code is that both E and M carry global charge, and they carry global charge one half of the charge of the original boson. And as explained by Sental and Ashvin, you know, that in fact precludes driving the surface into a trivial phase by condensing, let's say, the M particle. But what we would like to ask is, can one demonstrate that this mutual dion condensate is an SPT phase without appealing to the surface? And to do this, we really are following work by Michael and Feng Chen, which is that if you're trying to understand the symmetry protected topological phase in the bulk, it's very useful to gauge the global symmetries and then ask what kind of physics you get out when you gauge the global symmetries. Is the physics in an SPT when it's gauged different than the trivial insulator when it's gauged? That's my understanding of the strategy. So can one just, okay, good. So let me remind you of what happens in electron topological insulators when one gauges the gauges the electric charge of the electron. That is, we couple to Maxwellian electrodynamics of the electrons, but we allow the possibility for a monopole, which doesn't exist in nature, but we're theorists, so we allow it. One then, as I've already described, if one integrates out the electrons in the electron topological insulator, one generates the theta term with theta equals pi. And then there is this so-called Witten effect, which is it was beautifully confirmed in very nice numerical calculations by Michel Franz and Rosenberg, which is if you take a lattice model of an electron topological insulator, just electrons with spin orbit interactions hopping on a cubic lattice, and you couple in an external magnetic field and you insert a monopole into the bulk, by ramping up some flux from 0 to 2 pi, what you'll find is if you can integrate the amount of charge that comes in, you get a polarization charge of 1 half, or it could be minus 1 half. So a monopole inside the electron topological insulator has polarization charge 1 half. A monopole in a band insulator has no charge at all. And so this gives one a qualitative distinction between an electron topological insulator and a trivial band insulator. And so those are distinct phases of matter. Okay, so I think, as I say, this is one example of using this gauging technique to try to distinguish the SPT phase from the trivial phases. What about in this three-dimensional bosonic topological insulator one I've been considering, which has also charge conservation and pi-Russell invariance? So we minimally couple now the bosons, the original microscopic boson, to the external gauge field, and we can integrate out the gauge field. And what we find is something which is consistent with what Ashvin and Sental found, which is a theta term with theta equals 2 pi. This is a little bit fast and dirty. I mean, actually, we have explicitly a time reversal invariant system, so we don't really generate this term, but morally we do. I think these theta terms are just, they really just encode the physics of the Witten effect. I mean, you almost don't need it. You can just say we have a Witten effect. And what is the Witten effect? Well, now when theta equals 2 pi, if we stick in a monopole into this bosonic topological insulator, rather than charge 1 half, polarization charge 1 half getting sucked up, we have polarization charge 1. Let me call it minus 1. So here we have an external monopole placed into this three-dimensional bosonic topological insulator, and there's a polarization charge of minus 1. We have a monopole with charge minus 1. But let's just add a boson, a microscopic boson, to this to create a monopole with charge 0. So in contrast to the electron topological insulator where the monopole has a half odd integer charge, a monopole in this bosonic topological insulator can have an integer charge, can have 0 charge in particular. And so, of course, the monopole inside a trivial monopole insulator also has 0 charge, so it's not clear we can use this Witten effect in this bosonic SPT as a diagnostic to distinguish it from the trivial monopole insulator. We can, however, if one is more careful and looks at the statistics of the external monopole. So let's put the monopole into this external monopole into this bosonic SPT. The monopole is a boson. Now monopoles, as I say in the SVT, have this polarization charge. Since theta is equal to 2 pi, the polarization charge is minus 1. But that polarization charge doesn't change the statistics, right? And that's really the crucial thing. Okay. So we can then, however, add a boson onto that composite, creating a real a real pairing of a physical boson and a monopole in the external gauge field. And then the charge of this boson cancels in the far field the polarization charge of minus 1 coming from the Witten effect. And so we thereby create an electrically charged neutral object, a monopole, but it now has Fermi statistics because we have a binding of now the global boson and this external monopole. So we have what we call statistical Witten effect, which is a monopole inside the bosonic SPT is statistically transmuted, becoming a fermion. Okay. Okay, can the surface of the three-dimensional bosonic SPT be described with a two-dimensional field theory, or is it anomalous? I.e., is it not defined? Well, if it's not defined, I don't know. I mean, it's not defined, but we actually, following something, we actually have field theory, the target code. But the subtlety is if we actually try to define our field theory by doing what? By regularizing it, and really regularizing and putting on a lattice so that we can gauge the extra limit field with a compact gauge field, then it turns out that cannot be done in a consistent way maintaining locality. And that's basically the external 2 pi flux when inserted is not invisible to these charged 1/2 hartongs. So evidently this theory which is not defined is not definable. Yeah. So evidently this not defined theory is anomalous.
On this 2D surface, if I ignore this symmetry action, I can define the theory, right? So I think that if you allow to define a symmetry action in a nonpole, it's still possible.
I mean, you can define the theory, but you don't have... you can put the theory on a lattice, but you can't take a compact gauge field and couple it in. And so that... Okay.
You mean as a purely two dimensional?
Yeah. You cannot, to define the field theory, you have to regularize it. And I don't, other than in special cases like the quantum Hall effect, really the only way I know how to regularize things is put it on a lattice. If you put it on a lattice and you have the notion of and you insist that you can, gauge the charge, which you could in the original model that you started with, so it's almost a necessity, then it's impossible to gauge the external electromagnetic field, if it's compact and if you insist on locality. You can give up locality and then do it.
You want to gauge the U1 field, not the S as equal, right?
No, I'm just gauging the external U1.
If I just consider this as equal, how I call the model with some knowledge.
No, but the point is that, as Senton emphasized with us, in this toric code, the quasi particles. a little more commentary coming up. So we should talk later because I want to get to the next. I hate to drum this home, but I wasted about a year of my life trying to understand what the hell anomalous is. Can we please in condensed matter physics just say that the two-dimensional surface physics, not some ill-defined theory, can only exist on the boundary of a three-dimensional SVT? Can we replace physics? Can we erase theory by physics? Just for those of us who are more simple-minded that don't understand field theories that are not defined. So what is anomalous? The only thing that I can see which is anomalous, and my apologies to John, the only thing that appears anomalous to me is the chutzpah of our particle theory predecessors capable of being imprecise with such apparent precision. Or is it being precise with such imprecision? I don't know. I can't tell. I mean, you think you have an effective field theory, it's not defined, but you, it depends on who the you is, and then you try to define it. And it's, for me, it's more than philosophy, and I think it really comes home when Shagun writes these simple sentences, even if grammatically incorrect ones. if something's not defined, you can't use it to classify things. I mean, and that's... Okay, so I maybe have just a minute left or so. So let me just mention that there's We have dying constructions for other three-dimensional SVTs. U1 direct Z2T. Where the Bott monopoles are fermions is a U1 direct Z2T, where the Bott monopoles are Kramer's doublet. I mean, these are consistent with things that, that Ashton and Sentel had. But for this one, we actually use one of the set of partons are fermionic. We can do things for just time reversal invariants alone. These tables are consistent with Hermley mod Levin, as Sentel explained. The fun one is actually beyond cohomology, and this beautiful paper by Fiona and Zengchen and, wait, no, sorry, Chen? Sorry. Just Chen. Can I do what Michael Freeman does and call Zengchen just Wang, right? Lucas and Ashwin. Then I'll stop just a minute. And so, so we again enlarge a symmetry. We just have time reversal invariants. We're going to enlarge a symmetry. We're going to break that down at the end. We break the bosons into partons. But now we don't just put those partons into dions and condense. We basically put these partons into SVT phase. Right? So we put the plus partons into an SVT phase with theta equals 2 pi and the minus partons into a trivial phase. And so then the monopoles in the internal gauge field, which still have the dynamical field, are themselves fermions. And we can then build dions from those fermionic monopoles and the charges, the original charges, and condense those dions. And we end up with this all fermionic toric code, where the E and the M particles are really now the fermionized monopoles in this theta equals 2 pi phase of the bosonic partons. So there's sort of some gymnastics one has to play. It's sort of like this. You can imagine, I think, iterating this, and a bit like a hierarchy at some level. We have the Z2 cross Z2, but since I started 45 minutes late, can I get a little more time? Okay, that's it.
Naive question. So it seems that several approaches all focus on the U1 cross Z2 and U1 centimeter cross Z2 and Z2. So is it possible to generalize it to other groups, like other discrete symmetries?
Yeah, probably, but not by me. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure this is, well, okay. How much one can generalize it? ZK, I mean, I'm.
It's completely.
Yeah, abelian groups. I mean, I don't know how far one could take this. This is just, this is where it's at. And, and I think that's interesting to see where, how it can be generalized. And, if there's someone that's good at doing those things, it'd be lovely to, see what they could do with that.
Astra?
The quantum mechanical bound states are monopole and electric charge. Supposed to have half integer angular momentum, as shown by Saha soon after Dirac's quantization condition. So does it have implication in your world?
Well, okay, so we don't have rotational invariance. Even we're on a lattice, and we can make the lattice, have no symmetry whatsoever. So while you don't have to have spin, you have to have some frame. I mean, there's something more fundamental than the spin, which I don't think I understand all that well, but it ties in with the ribbon condensates. It's that has to be the particle has to. It can't just be a point particle. It has to have a frame, and indeed, when we look at this 2-2 condensate and have the emergent 1-1 fermion, I mean, it has a frame. And. And that that frame is playing a crucial role in seeing the fermionic hopping algebra, you guys. Now, it would be nice to be able to restore rotational symmetry and actually have the physical spin a half emerge right in front of us. I mean, I would love to be able to do that, and maybe it's possible. That's a great question, and I.
Cheng, actually, I have a.
question. So how does the diamond transform under this time reversal? It's a kind of transform like a double disk, or just it's a purely one-dimensional version.
No, the dions are either invariant in the time reversal, or they pick up. They just go to that complex conjugate. We're in these constructions for the SPT with time reversal invariants. We need the dions to transform trivially into time reversal. You want to know whether t squared is minus one or plus one? Is that or not?
If it's possible, like to carry the t squared is minus.
Yeah, well, no, that's. I mean, we're doing that. I mean, you basically can choose the.
I'm not talking about the surface power, but just talking about this bulk.
Well, no, but the bulk. Well, yeah. So you don't want to have a. I think the dions are just singlets under time reversal, and then we condense them. Nothing interesting happens. I mean, that's kind of. I mean, you could start considering other situations. I mean, in fact, the original. I mean, what I talked about at the beginning, just the NM dion condensate that transforms, picks up that transforms non-trivially under time reversal because the monopole charge changes sign, but the electric charge doesn't. And so then when you condense it, you can't recover time reversal invariants. And
how about if I define this CT, charge conjugation and time reversal?
Well, you can start looking at various other symmetries. So I guess, Z2's charge conjugation. Yeah, so in fact, with a Z2 cross Z2, we can just get away with a single flavor of partons. Because we don't have to worry about time reversal invariants.
So you mentioned the goal of finding an analog of the dynamical transcendence theory of the monopole effect. And at some point you had some B fields flying up, but you quickly integrated them out.
Here it is. It's a dynamical theta cross theta term in this case. It looks trivial and it is. But I haven't actually put in the couple to the external electromagnetic field. This is like just an abelian Chern-Simons, analogous to the abelian Chern-Simons. It's not quite because the current isn't related to this flux, but one has the partons as well. But this is the effective field theory in the bulk. But this field theory, the F wedge F, has no life in the bulk. I mean, it really, without a surface, it more or less doesn't have any meat. So it becomes a Chern-Simons theory when you integrate to the surface.
So I'm confused about the statement. You have this Z2 torque code, and if E and M both have charge 1/2, then this cannot exist in 2D, but it can exist the surface of 3D. But then what I seem to be getting from your talk is that you need the U1 to be compact. Is that playing an important role?
Yeah, it's playing a big role.
So, it's possible to have 1/2 charge even if it's not
compact. Well, when we say that if we have charge conservation, but we can only couple to a non-compact gauge field, it means we have no notion of a local continuity equation. So there's no, global charge conservation to me is really intuitively much more local. I mean, you can't just have particles disappearing, right? But when we put it on a lattice and we have the compact gauge field, we know then what the current operator is, and there's a continuity equation. There's a locally conserved charge.
I think you're answering a slightly different question. So you're answering your question is that U1 doesn't have to be compact, but what Matthew is saying is that it has to be compactable.
Okay.
That he's using compactability to give a counter argument why this can't exist in 2D. But you just declare by fiat that your electromagnetic field is compact.
No, but the point is that
theory cannot exist in 2D.
Yeah. But one's starting with a three-dimensional theory in which one does have in which you can gauge with a compact gauge field.
Yeah.
And moreover, this physical processes, if once you gauge, which a monopole passes through the surface and it just a fermion appears on the surface and that's the thing is if you want to save an anomalous field theory, you can start giving up various things. You could give up the gaugeability with a compact gauge field. You could give up locality. You know, you could decide, you could give up maybe continuous time and look at discrete time. I think you might be able to do that. I don't know what the rules are, and that's partly what has been confusing about whether one calls something anomalous. Is, you know, what are the rules that, you know, are required of you in order to not be able to define it, in order to say that you're actually something that's anomalous?
That's